Good morning, 78 degrees now as we cruise throughout a Friday. It is time for a legislative update, and as we do on the first Friday of the month, we are joined by State Representative Mr. Doug Blex. How you doing, sir?
Just fine. Hot and dry, but hopefully that'll change maybe a little bit here in the future.
That's right. That is certainly the hope. So, hey, I appreciate you coming on here, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about water in a few, but as we like to start off with, we did get the revenue information released here a couple days ago, so can you tell us a little bit of updates on that?
Well, to bring people up to date, Kansas operates on a fiscal year, which runs from July basically through the end of June, and so this is the first month of our new fiscal year, and we have a revenue estimating group that make predictions as to how much money we will bring in, and that's made up of university economic professors as well as Department of Revenue. So Kansas come in at, we were 2.4% above the estimates on our withholding and income tax, but it was slightly over 13% above a year ago. So we're still getting in positive returns. And keep in mind, when we talk income tax, that's primarily wage withholding for those people that's working and get a check every week or every 2 weeks. That's your state taxes being withheld. That makes up the largest component of that $313 million that we collected in the month of July. And then sales and compensating use, which is out-of-state sales tax on compensating use, it was 4.1% above the revenue estimate at $315 million. So we're starting off the year again, or the month, pretty good, with slightly over $600 million this month. So hopefully we can continue that process, and then when we get in session next January, hopefully there'll be a big enough pot that we can start giving some money back to taxpayers rather than holding it in a bank account.
All right, of course, do appreciate that update as we get those numbers here at the start of the month. Now, moving on to another topic that I know Representative Peck had mentioned here when he was on a little while ago. This Apex bill kind of related to this Panasonic battery plant. I know he touched on this just a little bit, but can you bring us up to speed, especially for the folks who haven't heard about this before?
Well, some of you might recall three years ago, we had a big competition with the state of Oklahoma to locate a major mega business in Kansas, which is, I'm really 100% support for business. And this was a $4 billion deal to build batteries for electric cars, and we actually competed. A lot of this process to attract companies is a lot like what we do locally here in our county and cities to try to sweeten the pot. And even though I'm very pro-business, I actually was a little nervous about that, and I actually voted against it, the bill, because I personally felt that we should have given incentives to spread that money out rather than just putting all of our eggs in one basket, so to speak. And Panasonic spent about $4 billion. Well, they could bring 4,000 jobs into the state of Kansas. It's up northeast Kansas by DeSoto. And they could, but here's kind of the catch. Federal incentives, will spend $4 billion. They broke ground in November of 22 and expected to complete the plant in 2025. But they could earn $6.8 billion in federal incentives. And then if you add in another $1 billion that the Kansas taxpayers provided for them, the company could actually earn in tax credits, $8 billion on a $4 million investment. So this bill was kind of pushed through, come in real fast into the House from the Senate. Governor supported it, and basically we had to actually trim down some really lucrative really over-the-top expense reimbursements. And when I talk about reimbursements, that's all, keep in mind, that's all taxpayer money. So we were basically funding, Kansas taxpayers were funding employees and training and a lot of other things really above and beyond. And now we kind of got a new wrinkle in. Evergy, the major electric supplier up in northeast Kansas, is planning on going back to Kansas Corporation Commission and asking for another rate increase that they just asked for simply because the Panasonic battery plant will be Evergy's second largest electric consumer and more electricity than most entire cities. So we'll be probably talking about that next session, whether we want to extend that option to, say, other companies to come into Kansas. Which, you know, it's a good deal. I often said that in some ways we might have been better off as Kansas taxpayers to have that plant located in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then Coffeyville and Independence and Caney could have been some bedroom communities and people that worked there could have been there. But anyhow, we're going to be looking at that this next coming session, whether we want to extend that process.
I appreciate you giving us a little bit of an update on that. And, you know, another thing that people have frankly had, you know, a lot of concerns about is it is dry. And we have had now many water warnings issued and into water emergencies, especially there in Chautauqua County. Can you give us any update on the water bill that I know has, you know, been passed? And I know that different municipalities will be able to take advantage of some of that. But what's the latest?
Well, I was scheduled to attend a water meeting out at Great Bend on the 20th, but that got my committee meeting got moved to Topeka. But I did call Director Connie Owens, Director of the Kansas Water Office, and got a fresh update yesterday as to where they are. And keep in mind, about 90% of the bills that we pass in our previous January session take effect in July the 1st. So we've just basically had a month of where that bill takes effect, but they have to go to administrative rules and regulations. And I said several months ago, right after we passed that, that optimistically it would probably be September or October at the earliest before details and the administrative rules on how to bring that money out there and the application process and such before it could actually go. So I talked to the Director Owen, and she said basically, yeah, that would be probably very optimistic to have the process completed by October. You know, it more likely be toward the end of the year because they got to develop that project application. And for those of you that don't remember, cities can apply for a grant, and it's not necessarily a guarantee, but if they've paid on the their water treatment debt, for example, for at least a period of 5 years, they would be eligible. The small cities, less than 2,000, would be eligible for a 90% forgiveness of that loan, which would be huge. I mean, to places like Caney and the smaller towns where we have not a big population and very, very millions of dollars in cost in upgrading requirements. But it looks like that $35 million that I worked, as well as a lot of other people, hard to get through, which I'm really glad we did, and we certainly need money for water, and we need attention for water, and it probably won't be available to local cities until probably, you know, maybe the first of the year, which I kind of expected. So I did talk to when we were speaking, Director Owen. Colorado has a program that does some project application, and she said they were going to look closely at that plan and how they do it out there. It's been in place for several years and fairly successful, so hopefully we won't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, the help will get here eventually for some of these different municipalities, but it is just kind of a slow moving train, and that's about how it goes. You know, we just gotta wait and be patient. But it does sound like this is going to be a real benefit for some of these communities who have these big water debts, and also just water needs to find some maybe new sources or just think creatively as far as that goes.
Yeah, and you know, I've always said decisions about water is made in drought, and because the problem with human nature, if it starts raining big time, and it will rain again. I mean, it's certainly a crisis now. Personally, for myself, my farm pond is almost 8 feet low, and I'm in a process, if we don't get something fairly quick, of having to sell some cattle simply because there's not water. And I went to Elk County Fair here a week ago, and they're actually worse shape. They're cutting corn and ensilage up there. It's actually drier than probably Montgomery. And I talked to a lot of cattle producers, and they basically said that, you know, we've got pastures that we rent that we don't even have any cattle in them simply because there's no water. So it is a crisis, and we need to really, you know, pray for a pond filling rain, and certainly the forecast to get temperatures cool down will help, but it is getting critical here, and that's something we're not used to in southeast Kansas.
Well, sure, yeah, especially given the amount of rain that this region usually gets. And I did want to ask you the question, you know, I don't know really how feasible it is anymore. We think about the 50s and 60s and all the reservoirs that were built in the state of Kansas. Is it even really feasible to think about new reservoir projects, or is that just a non-starter with all the environmental regulations and other, land problems that we deal with here in the 21st century?
I think, personally, for the most part, it's almost a non-starter. Most of the reservoirs that we did get through took anywhere from 5 to almost 10 years to get built and permitted, and it's even worse now as far as environmental permits and certainly the cost of the land, trying to take land, and some by condemnation. So I almost think that's not an option for us. I mean, we might be able to come in with some smaller watershed-type lakes, and I'm saying smaller, 100 to 200 acres, a little easier. But looking at federal reservoirs, from my experience of dealing with the Corps of Engineers and their issues, I would say that's not a real viable option.
Sure. Yeah, it's one of those things that can be quite controversial. We've seen that time and time again here in this state over, the past 100 years even. Well, I did want to ask you, I know you're going to be going up to Topeka before too long and got some interim committees that are you're going to be participating in, correct?
Yes. We have interim committees, which is actually, for the public's information, made up of 3 to 5 House members and anywhere from 2 to 4 Senate members. And what happens is that both chambers will get together with representatives and discuss a topic. And those are kind of decided by the committee chairs and the speaker as to how the process goes. The one good thing that happens is if we can come to an agreement on a particular problem, certainly water will be the hot topic. That'll be Monday and Tuesday, and then I go to mental health on Wednesday through Friday on the week of the 20th. And no doubt we will actually probably in the water committee be discussing potentially more funding for water and with all that's going on and the hot spot that it's causing in the state of Kansas. So, and when we passed the original bill, we knew it wasn't going to do exactly what all we wanted, and we just kind of backed off to get what we could get. And actually, that $35 million in reality probably should be close to $100 million even annually to keep our water supply viable. But anyhow, if this committee, this interim committee, agrees, then what they do is that kind of they give a little small committee report, and that sets the stage for legislation for the upcoming session. So in my experience, those interim committees that can come to agreement during the summer, both House and the Senate, those particular topics and bills have a very, very good chance of being passed in the upcoming session. So it's kind of laying the groundwork for what we're going to do next January, and we'll have time to get public input. And that's a good thing about a summer committee. It's only a few select people on of the 125 members of the representatives and 40 of the Senate, but it does set the stage and a good process, because just like the Apex bill I talked about earlier, that Panasonic battery plant, that almost got pushed through too quick, and now we're finding out things that we probably should have looked at. And so the advantage of this interim committee is we'll be able to discuss those and have a little more time.
Sure. A little bit like summer school, you get a little bit ahead and can get some work done for the upcoming session. So we got a minute left here. Anything else you'd like to share with the listeners as we wrap up?
Well, like I said earlier, a lot of the bills that come effect July, so we've got a lot of new changes that will change things. And certainly, I've been hitting around my county fairs. I represent five counties, and between Elk and Chautauqua and Montgomery, and I'm going to Cali County over by in Winfield tonight. So hot weather, but I always enjoy the crowds, and the county fair is a special time. Usually we always get a rain. Seems like the Winfield, Cali County, I will always get a big rain over there. So hopefully I'll get rained out tonight. And I think what we need to do is we need to really probably get on our knees and start praying for some really pond-filling rains and the good Lord to bless us with some good timely rains.
Hey, that's a good reminder. It's amazing the power of prayer and what it can do. So I appreciate you coming by, sir, and enjoy the fair. It's going to be a good one over there in Winfield.
All righty. Thank you.
All
everybody
right.
Have a good day.
Hey,
God bless you.
You take care. That is State Representative Doug Blex here on the Mighty 690, and we appreciate him coming by the first Friday of every month here at 740 on the Mighty 690. Well, we're just a couple of minutes away from another news update at 8 o'clock, and then we have our Ask the Expert segment coming up with Charles Skank of Skank Insurance.